From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. It seems like two steps forward and one step back yet again in Syria. On the one hand, the Syrian government has had one success after another in recovering territory from the various terrorist groups backed by the U.S., the Saudis, and the Turks that have conducted a war in that country since February of 2011. On the other hand, the U.S. does not appear to be finished with it, and of course there are divisions among the leadership of the U.S. between those on the side of President Trump and those who prefer the policies that were conducted under the former Obama administration. For more on all of that, we spoke with political analyst and lecturer on international relations at Moscow State University, Mark Sloboda.
There's a lot going on with Syria this week, both within Syria and within the greater sphere of Russian diplomacy, and a realignment, maybe perhaps realignment is too strong a word, but a rebalancing of geopolitical forces in the Middle East, which all of the Western media is talking about this week. Now, you know, there's always a discussion of what to read. People ask me where I get my info and everything. I read everything in the Western media,
right,
you know, about such situations. I follow all of the relevant journalists in Russia, Syria, you know, and elsewhere. So I follow them on their social media as well as read their articles. The same thing with the think tankers. I like to call them Think Tankistan, most of them funded by Saudi Arabia and Qatar themselves, you know, hardly completely objective sources.
Okay,
you know,
right.
Charles Lister is one of the most infamous of those, of course.
Yeah.
You know, I also have sources in Syria and Turkey who get me some translated stuff, as I don't speak Arabic or Turkish. But I also read the Russian media and the Russian blogosphere and what they're saying. So I like to have a complete worldview. But if I was going to point people who want to follow what's going on and where I think I get the biggest, best picture of what's going on from a geopolitical perspective this week, generally speaking, but particularly this week, I want to point you to the Moon of Alabama blog. You can find it at moonofalabama.org, which is actually written anonymously by a former Western journalist living in Germany, who just had too much of the BS.
Yeah.
And the other article I want to highlight for you this week is In the Duran by Alexander McCourse, who, you know, full disclosure, is a personal friend of mine. He's a former barrister living in London, and he is the editor and probably the best writer for The Duran. He has an article out this week called The U.S. Plan C for Syria and Iraq, Its Reckless Game with the Kurds. Now, if you read these two articles, one, the Moon of Alabama, particularly from a tactical on the ground level, and Marcoris does an excellent picture of drawing in all the geopolitics and diplomacy, I think you'll get a really good picture for yourself of what's going on. So I will talk about it, but I urge anyone who's listening to read these and other things, of course, for yourselves and make up your own mind.
Yeah, one interesting story at Moon of Alabama is something that, you know, I've been following this, not there, but generally. Russia issues third warning against U.S. cooperation with terrorists.
Yeah. That's the one I'm talking about. Syria, yeah. Russia issues third warning against U.S. cooperation with terrorists.
Yeah, why don't you flesh that out a little bit so people know what you're talking about.
Yeah, let me just draw attention to one third article this week in Foreign Affairs, you know, the mainstream publication of Foreign Affairs in the U.S. Don't fund Syria's reconstruction. The West has little leverage and little to gain. This is by Sam Heller from the Century Foundation. Sam Heller was an early advocate from the very beginning of regime change in Syria, so you know where he's coming from. But he is one of these whom, within the last half a year, however grudgingly, had a mea culpa, realizes that the U.S.'s game is up, that it's not willing to commit what he thinks is enough for regime change, and therefore they should get out of Dodge and have nothing further to do with Syria, neither with the Kurds or with reconstruction or anything like that. Again, however grudgingly, he has this perspective now. But he's worth reading. He's intelligent, you know, when you consider his perspective, and he has at least come to this conclusion. So I would recommend reading Sam Heller, you know, both with this week and in general as well. It's good to read The Enemy. And he's one of the more rational and intelligent ones, have said, from the think tankers. Yeah, and his think tank is not funded by Saudi Arabia or Qatar, so he has a little bit of independence.
Yeah, he's arguing that reconstruction seems like the next battle to shape what happens in Syria. So he's still looking for, if not regime change, regime modification, and using reconstruction. In other words, we blew up your house. Gee, let's figure out who's going to help you live indoors, and we're going to use that to leverage power over you.
Yeah, well, actually, he doesn't want the U.S. to fund reconstruction in Syria at all. And it was just something I completely agree with him on. I don't think the U.S. or the West in general, which has for years fought, should have any investment opportunities or anything further. Thanks, but no thanks.
Just go away.
Yeah. Right. Let Russia and China and Iran and Iraq and these other countries deal with this matter themselves. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem you can get rid of Turkey completely. However unfortunate that is, they're just not going anywhere. But they have to be dealt with. Yep. All right. So what's going on the ground? Russia has issued a third warning to the U.S. It claims that the U.S. is cooperating with ISIS in Syria now. Not that, again, it wants ISIS to own Syria, right, which it never did, but from the very beginning, which Obama and John Kerry themselves openly admitted, they let Syria grow, they let ISIS and Al Qaeda grow in order to fight the Syrian government and to remove the Syrian government and territories. And then they were happy to fight ISIS or have their proxies fight ISIS when they could actually, or Al Qaeda when they could actually get them to, which wasn't very often. And then thus claim the territory for their proxies.
Right.
That way they didn't have to go to war with the Syrian government directly. They could have ISIS take territory and then take that territory back from ISIS. We see the same kind of game going on now in eastern Syria and also, again, once in central Syria. Mm-hmm. Apparently what the U.S. has done, a lot of what they're doing, is they have bought a lot of local Sunni Arab tribes who were part of ISIS, you know, however willingly or unwillingly, when ISIS expanded in the area. They have bought them out from under ISIS and are now cooperating with them and moving through their territory freely and using them for attacks on the Syrian government. Right. Because now it's the big race for natural resources. And the U.S. wants its chosen proxies, the Kurds, you know, with this branding name, the Syrian Democratic Forces, which is 90-95% Kurds with a few of these Arab local tribes thrown in for you know, token pretense that it's a not solely a Kurdish PKK anarcho-Marxist force.
Right.
They're moving through their territory. Now, this in itself is not altogether bad because the Russian and the Syrian government, they have bought off some of their opponents, some of the, shall we call them, more moderate rebels before. They have done the same, all right? But the big difference here is that the U.S. government is using these new tribes to help keep off the Syrian government and claim territory and natural resources for their proxy Kurdish forces in the east of Syria. And it's looking more and more, you know, like a new form of the partition of Syria. We had the plan A was regime change. That failed. We had the plan B being promoted by, you know, Brookings and other neocons, and as probably by the CIA, which was a Sunnistan or Salafistan in eastern Syria. That failed. One due to the inability of the U.S. and directing ISIS forces to dislodge the Syrian government from the vital city fortress of Deir ez-Zor, which held up under al-Qaeda and then ISIS siege together altogether for under 5 years. And it was a linchpin, a strategic linchpin for the Syrian government in East Syria. It has now been relieved of its siege and nearly completely liberated by the Syrian government and allied forces. Right. And also simply by the rapid expansion of the Syrian government across territory and their simple inability after so many repeated tries, you know, that it's laughable to create a moderate Sunni Arab proxy force. Every time they trained them, they up and ran and took their weapons and their training to al-Qaeda and ISIS and other jihadi groups like Ahrar al-Sham, and they were left with nothing. And this, they were never able to manufacture a Sunni, a moderate, relatively moderate, even Islamist rather than Wahhabist Sunni Arab force. Like they just couldn't do it.
They couldn't get the AstroTurf to grow. Right.
So now we're on plan C, and this is a plan I find a little incredulous simply because of how much it damages the U.S.'s own interests in the region and at the same time risks another regional conflagration coming on the end of this Syrian conflict. It has potential to be an even bigger regional conflict. And this is the U.S. backing of the Kurds. And then it has to be said, the Kurds within Syria and within the region are not a monolith, okay? Here when we're speaking about the Kurds, I'm talking directly about the branded Syrian Democratic Forces in East Syria, these that have been under the U.S. wing for a very long period of time. There are other Syrian Kurds also affiliated with the PKK in western Syria that are much closer to Russia and the Syrian government. Russia and the Syrian government have provided the Kurds with arms, with close air support, and they have cooperated back and forth all through this conflict. There have been very few, very isolated and very brief moments of some skirmishes, usually between some local youth hotheads. But throughout this entire conflict, until now, the Kurds as a whole have resisted fighting the Syrian government, and they must have been under enormous pressure from the U.S. government to do so. Instead, they fought ISIS, and they fought the U.S.'s other proxies, the Islamists and the FSA and other groups that they were working with. So the Kurds are not a monolith. We're talking particularly here, the ones being used for this new Plan C are the Syrian Democratic Forces in East Syria.
Right.
And they are using them to seize territory in eastern Syria and grab the resources. And whether this is for a potential partition or for leverage in end game negotiations for the formation of a new post-conflict Syrian government, whatever happens there or doesn't happen there, it's unknown. But it looks awfully close to partition at this point. And if not, then they're really, really leading the Kurds on again, even worse than they did in Iraq two times so far. And the Kurds have really better hope. The U.S. has set up something like 11 military and air bases, small ones, it must be said, but within Kurdish-controlled territory. Now, the Kurds make up around 8% of the Syrian population, but they now control territory that is a total of 23% of Syrian total geographic territory. And what they're doing now and have been for some time now. They've moved out of the northern regions bordering Turkey that were Kurdish majority areas where they had, a much easier, more reasonable time, after they had driven ISIS and the FSA and other Wahhabists and Islamists out of the area. Now they're moving into Sunni Arab majority desert areas. Again, low population, lots of desert, not much infrastructure, but also this is where the majority of where Syria's energy resources, both gas and oil, are located. Mm-hmm. And the U.S. wants to primarily deny them to the Syrian government and its ability to use it for reconstruction and reconsolidating the state after the conflict, but also, to give then to their Kurdish proxies, to have them have a revenue source independent of the U.S., which has been, of course, funding them completely for years now.
Right.
So this is a mess, and where the U.S. has been very specifically, there have been several incidents while these local Sunni Arab tribes that were a part of ISIS, now bought out to work with the U.S., were preventing advances by the Syrian government and taking oil fields in the area. There was simultaneously an attack by al-Qaeda coming out of the entirely al-Qaeda-controlled now Idlib. They had been quiet and consolidating their control after having driven out Tahrir al-Sham and taking over the entire region. Russia, Syria, and Turkey are supposedly working on a large deconfliction agreement to divide Idlib up into zones of responsibility, and Turkey is involved in some kind of game to convince the moderate al-Qaeda to shave off their beards and dress up in moderate new Syrian army rebel uniforms under their control before anyone attempts to move in and retake control, whether that's Turkey. And I really dislike this agreement of Russia's with the Turkish government, because this legitimizes a Turkish military presence in Syria. They've already seized a large swath of north central territory during their Operation Euphrates Shield, which is an invasion, an occupation, right, and a land grab. But now this legitimizes them even more with taking adjacent territory in Idlib. They have not started to do this. They're still working on their convincing the moderate al-Qaeda to change uniforms plan. But that's what's in the works. But now, perfect timing to distract the Syrian government and Russia from its advances in the east, where these vital energy resources are that the U.S.'s own proxies are racing for. Al-Qaeda comes launching with a major offensive, extremely well-armed, extremely well-coordinated, out of Idlib. And sets the Syrian government back majorly. They had to retransfer forces around to deal with it. It's largely under control at the moment, but there was even a group of 29 Russian military police. Most likely these were Chechens or other Russians of Islamic orientation in the area, the 29 of them that were surrounded and were just barely rescued in time. There's also attacks going on around Deir ez-Zor in East Syria. There was a Russian general and several of his staff killed, a high-ranking general, by pinpoint accuracy of ISIS that they have never demonstrated before. And the Russian Ministry of Defense has been very open in accusing that the only way that ISIS and al-Qaeda would get the type of information for these two attacks is if they had satellite info, which would have to have been transferred to them by the U.S. Now, of course, that is unverifiable for us, but it makes a lot of sense compared to what happened. And Russia is very not happy with these developments.
Yeah.
Whether it's buying off the Arab tribes or just transferring information to ISIS and Al-Qaeda, it is, most certainly collaboration, on a tactical level, the enemy of my enemy is my friend type of thing. Mm. And it shows that the U.S. is not done in Syria. Now, the problems with all of this for the U.S., why I found it so incredible that they would do this, is this is essentially creating a de facto Kurdish SDF state in a protectorate of the U.S., carving it out of northern Syria.
Right.
This is driving Turkey. It has driven Turkey, almost completely out of the U.S. sphere. Mm-hmm. And it, we have to remember that Turkey is still very much a member of NATO, closer to Russia and Iran in all of this, because they consider the Kurds, the Syrian Kurds are intimately related with the Turkish Kurdish independence movement, the Turkish version of the PKK. And this is a big mess. Turkey is very unhappy of this. They don't want this to go over into their own borders. A major part of what they have been doing in Syria is fighting Syria's Kurds. And a land grab, of course, for themselves. This Iraq is very not happy with this because Iraq has their own Kurds that are not politically affiliated with the PKK or the Syrian Kurds. Mm-hmm. They're ruled in northern Iraq by pretty much what I call it, the Barzani crime family, because it's a Kurdish mafia. That's what it is. They have been selling oil through Turkey.
Right.
That one is really hard to explain, but these Kurds were at least previously allied with Turkey, with Erdogan, to transfer oil illegally out of the country, collect the revenues themselves without sending it to Baghdad first, basically creating a de facto statelet, Kurdish statelet in Iraq. They have just held an independence referendum, which the entirety of the world has ignored. Even the U.S. condemned the referendum, which went, of course, very solidly in Kurdish favor. Now, it has to be said that the other minorities in the region of Iraq, the Yazidi and others, are very uncomfortable with all of this, of being in a rather than a federal Iraq, in a Kurdish independent state. But as a response to this, Turkey now has broken off relations with the Barzani-ruled Iraqi Kurds, actually held joint military exercises with Iraq, who has complained for a long time about the Turkish presence of troops in their territory in the Kurdish-controlled area.
Right.
This is
only a year
insane.
Ago. That was only a year ago that was happening.
And now they're cooperating with them and threatening to close off the borders of Iraqi Kurdistan. And there's all kinds of a mess. Iran's Kurds, of course, are getting into this. Iran doesn't want an independence moving spanning to the Kurdish majority areas of Iran, which border those in Iraq. And so Iran, Iraq, Turkey, and Syria are all very unhappy with the U.S. role in all of this. Now, you can argue whether the Kurds deserve their own state or not. They are the world's largest ethnicity without a state of their own. There is people advocate for a principle of self-determination. But I have a lot of problems with this because it is essentially also a policy of supporting the European ideology of ethnic nationalism, the idea that one ethnicity should reside within the political borders of a state, the nation state. And the big problem with this is it doesn't occur naturally. It has to occur, and it happened in Europe with hundreds of years of genocidal and fratricidal warfare.
Ethnic cleansing.
The, the Hundred Years' War, the 80 Years' War, the Wars of Spanish Succession, World War I, World War II, the Yugoslav Wars. It's continuing today in Ukraine, these wars of ethno-nationalism. And, you know, in Iraq, you know, Syria, Iran, it's quite obvious that the borders of one ethnicity are not all living just in one territory. You can talk about majorities here and minorities there in particular areas, but it would require, you know, major, you know, movements of population, ethnic cleansing, warfare. It's a big mess, and it has the potential to erupt and, you know, break the territorial integrity of at least four major states in the Middle East with this Kurdish issue. Two of them, you know, Turkey is a NATO member, and Iraq, you know, there's a government that was set up in, after a U.S. invasion and occupation, which now they don't get along so well,
right?
Because they are Shia. It's a Shia majority country, and you give a Shia majority country a free vote, they're going to gravitate closer to Iran, which is part of what the U.S. is also against. So this is all a big, huge mess of the U.S.'s creation, and we're looking at a potential new conflict with the Kurds, possibly against almost everyone else except for the United States, in Syria, spreading into Iraq and Turkey, and, you know, and theoretically even potentially up into Iran. It's a big mess. And the U.S. has simply given the Kurds, you know, far too much empty promises, I'm afraid. The Kurds in Syria, in my benefit, do deserve something, you know, for what they have done, some regional autonomy, some federalization, which I think the Russian government would be very likely to support and you know, push Syria to accepting, the Syrian government and Damascus to accepting, you know, in end negotiations. But if they keep under the U.S.'s wing like this, then there might come away with a conflict and possibly then with nothing. It could get much, much worse yet. And I really can't understand the U.S. strategists who have agreed to this and what they're thinking, because it really ruins the U.S. influence in the region in what were their own allies, Turkey and Iraq.
And now one other one, because we got like 2 minutes left, but you have the Saudi king in Moscow today, as a matter of fact.
Now, this is you know, absolutely, it's the first time a Saudi king has ever visited Moscow. I'm not a big fan of the Saudi government, and I'm not a big fan of the deals that Russia has signed, giving Saudi, as it has Turkey, deals to buy its most advanced air defense system, most likely the world's most advanced air defense system, the S-400, which the U.S. has been very afraid of in Syria, an air defense system that it will not sell to its own allies, Iran and Syria, that it has a mutual defense contract with, but now suddenly is selling. I'm not happy with all this. But as the U.S. press is reporting, it's Saudi recognizing that they lost the oil war, they lost the war in Syria, they're mired in a conflict they can't win in Yemen, and they're recognizing a new alignment of forces. I don't think Russia, Putin, I've seen titles in The Spectator and elsewhere, Russia doesn't now own the Middle East, but Russia is once again a major geopolitical player and has allies in the Middle East. And even its enemies, like Saudi Arabia and Turkey, are coming to the table for parleying and deals. And, you know, and sometimes business transcends geopolitics in this day and age, or at least follows sometimes parallel, sometimes perpendicular paths.
Yeah.
And you know, the images of the Saudi king getting stuck on his golden elevator with his 1,500 man entourage as he arrives in Moscow, and it provided a lot of humorous moments. But it is a serious event, for good or for ill. I mean, whatever has come bad from supplying arms to Wahhabists. I mean, the U.S. has never Oops. Faced backlash or blowback from problems like that. But that's what it is. That's what the Kremlin is doing, and the U.S. can't be happy with it. Although they'll now obviously have direct access to an S-400 to take apart and re-engineer. Between being sold to Turkey and Saudi. Another reason I'm not fond of the what the Kremlin is doing here. But you know, this is it was an earth-shattering week in Syria, and it promises to continue on. Don't take your eye off that ball, because as hard as it may seem, it could yet get worse.
Yep. Okay, Mark. And on that note, we'll see you again next week and speak with you about some of this stuff and see what kind of surprises they lay on us in the intervening period. Thanks a lot for your time, man.
Thanks for having me, Don.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.